Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 in San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. You could make the argument plastic defines our life. I mean, look around you. There is plastic in everything, from your car, your phone, where you get your food from, to where you store your food for later. Even in the radio or computer you're listening to this show on. Plastic has long been an indispensable component of modern industrialized life, and it's everywhere, across the globe, from Europe to Africa to Asia, across the Pacific, back to the Americas. Plastic is everywhere, made on every continent and put to nearly every kind of use. But despite the wide use and wide availability of plastic, it actually hasn't been around for that long. Most modern polymers used to create plastics weren't even in existence before the 1930s. World War II rapidly increased the necessity for durable plastic materials for smaller items, as metals were being used for tanks, bombers, and artillery. And since the 1950s, plastics have been widely used as consumer materials in an ever more throwaway culture. But the rise of bottled water in the 1990s and plastic shopping bags has really fueled a new growth in the over-disposability of plastics. And with the glacial rate of degradation, if there's any at all, with even the most flimsy plastics, the problem of plastic pollution continues to grow. There's a lot of thrown away plastic bottles and plastic bags and plastic of all kinds on the sides of freeways, roads, even in the deserts and up in the forests. But one place that all that discarded plastic material eventually winds up is the ocean. And our oceans are taking a beating, becoming more and more filled to the brink with plastic waste. And here to talk about the problems of plastics in the ocean is our friend Elizabeth Willis of the San Diego Surfrider chapter. Elizabeth is on the executive committee of San Diego Surfrider, and the problem of plastics in the ocean has become a major cause for her work and her activism with Surfrider's Rise Above Plastics campaign. And we welcome her to the program. Elizabeth, good to have you here. Welcome to Tree Huggers International.
Very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Elizabeth, you're a lawyer, correct?
Yes.
Can we talk real quickly about where you got your undergrad and your grad degree from?
Sure. I went to USC, got an undergrad degree in finance, and then I went to Berkeley and got my law degree there.
So how have you been able to take your law background and parlay that into your activism?
Well, I actually studied environmental law at Berkeley, and so that gave me a really good background, even though I don't practice it now. It gave me a good background on the basic environmental framework for regulating environmental issues. But at Surfrider, we're a grassroots organization, and a lot of what we do is awareness and education and outreach to try and make people aware of problems and solutions to environmental issues. And mainly just having the ability to analyze and address problems is something that being a lawyer helps with. But I haven't used my law background too much in my work with Surfrider.
So there hasn't been a big defining courtroom moment just yet?
No. Probably not. Probably won't happen. But
maybe that's around the corner somewhere. Well, so how did you get involved with these concerns about plastics in the sea?
It was something that we became aware of through Algalita Marine Research Foundation. They've been studying plastics in the sea for over 10 years. They discovered this big garbage patch of plastic out in the Pacific Ocean. They call it the Eastern Garbage Patch or the Central Pacific Gyre, and a lot of people have heard about it now. It's a patch of plastic floating in the ocean about twice the size of Texas. So through Algalita, we at Surfrider in San Diego became aware of the issues out there and how much plastic is floating around out there and the problems that it's causing. And so we started locally looking around to see what we could do to try and reduce the amount of plastic that's making its way into the marine environment. And last year, a couple of the executive committee members came up with an idea with Rise Above Plastics, trying to spur people to action to reconsider the use, especially of single-use plastics, and try and implement that. Since we started it in San Diego, it's actually been picked up by the Surfrider Foundation national organization, actually global organization, and turned into a campaign that we're trying to get all of our chapters around the world, including Australia, Japan, Europe, to implement, because it is a worldwide problem.
So this plastic patch in the ocean, what's it called again?
The Central Pacific Gyre. Sometimes it's called the North Pacific Gyre, or the Eastern Garbage Patch, sometimes it's called.
And is that made up mostly of single-use plastics?
Well, a lot of the plastic that makes its way there is dumped overboard by ships, makes its way from the land, plastic bottles. It could be old TVs. You know, they're not necessarily single-use plastics. Anything that has found its way into the ocean kind of congregates in this area because of the currents. It took a long time to discover it. Because of the currents, boats don't go to this area. So when Captain Moore from Algalita kind of stumbled across it, it was a new discovery. It was only about 10 years ago. I think it was in 1996. Algalita Marine Research Foundation, an organization Captain Moore started to study the problem of plastics in the marine environment after he discovered the garbage patch. They're based in Long Beach. They're at algalita.org. They have the most comprehensive research on what's out there.
This North Central Pacific Gyre, this enormous span of plastic, is the size of Texas.
Twice the size of Texas and growing tenfold every 2 to 3 years. It's just getting bigger. And since he started studying it, it's doubled in size.
How is it growing so fast? Is it growing so fast from plastics that were around 30 years ago that are finally making their way into the sea? Or is this because of increased plastic use in other countries?
I don't know that there's been a study of where all of the plastic is coming from, because a lot of it is so broken down that all you see are plastic bits. So you can't necessarily trace where those are coming from, you know, whether it's been around for the last 50 years or whether it's something new. But it's no secret, as you mentioned in your intro, that the amount of plastic that we use has increased dramatically. Single-use plastics and other materials, packaging has increased tremendously in the last few years. Buying products with less packaging is another step that you can take. I started buying milk in glass bottles again, totally retro. But you can buy organic milk in glass bottles, and the bottles, you take them back and they sterilize them and reuse them. And there's just one way to think, okay, well, I'm not buying plastic packaging for that product that I buy every week. And so, you know, if you look around, you will find that there are options. Because there's this increasing amount of plastic, there's increase in the amount that it kind of gets released into the environment. It blows out of trash cans, it blows out of landfills, people litter. There are problems in the manufacturing of plastic that allow plastic to be released into the environment. You know, ships throw it overboard. There's all different ways that it can get in there, and the more plastic that's used, the more that happens.
And after a certain amount of time, I mean, this plastic, it degrades. It doesn't necessarily decompose.
That's a good point about it not decomposing. Most plastic is made out of petroleum. They're starting to make plastics out of corn and some other vegetable materials that actually can biodegrade because they are made out of organic matter. But petroleum-based plastic photodegrades, meaning it'll break up into smaller and smaller pieces in sunlight, but it never completely goes away. It's estimated that every piece of plastic that was ever produced, if it hasn't been burned, which is one way to get rid of it, but it releases a whole bunch of toxins into the air, it's still in existence today. Algalita estimates that over the last 50 years, more than 100 million tons of plastic has made its way into the ocean.
And this is from every continent on the earth.
Right. And some are worse than others. I mean, certainly if you go to Asia, you see, you know, I've seen rivers clogged with plastic bags because some people don't have as greater environmental awareness of where, you know, if they throw something in the river, it ends up in the ocean. In a lot of countries, garbage dumps are situated by rivers. I've seen that in Mexico. Anything that's dumped there, it makes its way into the ocean.
Do you think in the 1960s and 1970s, when the current environmental movement arguably got underway, there was at first a willingness to use less plastics, but then as time went on, people kind of forgot about it, because then in the 1980s, we really started getting a lot of those plastic shopping bags. And then in the 1990s, people started using a lot of these disposable bottles of water.
I think in the 80s, people were focused on convenience. You know, everybody was told drink lots of water. Plastic water bottles are convenient. You know, you can drink them and dispose of them. And so it makes it really easy to be fit and healthy and all of that. And nobody thought about it too much because it was kind of a new thing. And people weren't thinking, hey, this plastic water bottle is made out of petroleum, shipped here from somewhere, and now I'm just getting rid of it. The amount of resources that go into that are incredible and really weren't quantified. And I think that the plastics manufacturers had a lot to do with being or making sure that that information didn't get out to the public, because it's certainly in their interest to sell bottled water.
And that whole disposability idea, my goodness, you use it once and you throw it away. And it's not like a piece of paper that will eventually break down somehow, even with all the glue and components that might be in there along with the paper. I mean, that's plastic.
Well, you know, we're not saying that all plastic is bad. Certainly plastics have valid uses in our society, so long as they're disposed of correctly, recycled if possible. But single-use plastics, because plastics, once they're created, they're around forever. So the idea that you would use it once and get rid of it is a waste of resources and a huge cost on society. What we're saying is, you know, think about that, because, you know, it's just, it is silly. It's not sustainable. You know, the use of petroleum to create vessels to carry our water for one use is not a sustainable use of
it. And it's not even that much water.
Yes, yeah. The estimate is you could fill a water bottle, one of those little plastic, what are they, 12-ounce water bottles, one-third with oil to show how much oil is used just to produce that one bottle. The water that you're getting in there has come to light is often just tap water that's been put through some filters. So people are paying for it. It's one of the big hoaxes, I think, of the century to, you know, sell people water that they could get out of the tap. Industrial waste products are certainly a big problem, and there aren't very good practices when it comes to manufacturing of plastics. A lot of these so-called plastic nurdles, and nurdles are little plastic pellets, that's the technical name, that are used for manufacturing plastic. If you want to make something out of plastic, you buy a shipment of nurdles. That's how petroleum is transformed into the raw product, and then it's melted and put into different forms. So nurdles, unfortunately, look like fish eggs. I've seen a video of how they're transported. They're basically, somebody takes a hose from the manufacturer and fills up a container on a train, and a lot of them get spilled into the environment. It's actually a bigger problem than we realize, because so much plastic is manufactured, so much is transported, that a lot of these nurdles are just spilled and end up in storm drains. And that's something else I want to mention, because everything that you see on the street when it rains, it goes into the storm drain and ends up in the ocean.
Give it time. It all winds up in the ocean.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on KBZT, FM 94.9. My name is Tommy Howell, and joining us today is Elizabeth Willis. Elizabeth is a member of the Executive Committee of the San Diego Chapter of the Surfrider Foundation, and we're talking about the abundance of plastic waste in the world's oceans and how it gets there. We were talking earlier, and you mentioned that tan plastic in particular winds up being very inviting because it looks like some kinds of marine organisms.
Right. It looks like krill. And Algalita has this video called Our Synthetic Sea, which you can get from their website, that shows how much a little piece of plastic will look like a krill. And it's mistaken. The research indicates that more tan plastic is eaten because it looks like krill. Nurdles are mistaken for fish eggs, as we mentioned. Plastic bags look like jellyfish. So the point is that a lot of the plastic that's out there is mistakenly ingested by birds, sea turtles, and even whales. They recently found a whale, I think it was a baleen whale, and when they opened it up, they found 23 cubic meters of plastic bags in its stomach, the theory being it ate them thinking that they were jellyfish, and it ended up choking it or causing it to starve to death, because what happens is they don't digest plastic, so it just keeps filling up their stomach until they can't get any food in there.
Are there materials in the plastic that would poison them?
Besides choking them or causing them to starve because the plastic stays in their stomachs and doesn't allow any food to get in there, plastics absorb toxins in the ocean, in seawater, at a much, much higher rate than other materials. So toxins will be very, very, like PCBs, DDE, get very, very concentrated on plastic. They can end up poisoning the animal, but also they make their way into the food chain, because it starts with the little fish who eats the nurdle that's full of PCBs, and then the bigger fish eats them, and, you know, eventually, you know, making its way into humans.
So eventually it comes back and we wind up eating our trash.
Right.
You mentioned the effect plastic has on turtles earlier. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, turtles eat jellyfish. And plastic bags that find their way into the ocean are often mistaken for jellyfish. There are numerous findings of turtles that have died from ingesting plastic bags, basically choking them. As you probably have seen, is that plastic bags are easily released into the environment. They catch wind and they blow away. The beginning of American Beauty, the movie, has an illustration of that as this plastic bag blows through this neighborhood. I call them, I don't think I coined this term, I've read it someplace, you know, the urban tumbleweed. Because you see them blowing everywhere and eventually into the ocean.
You go to Tijuana, it's crazy. They're just blowing around in the wind down there like a little tornado.
Right. You know, if they're thrown into a landfill, they're picked up out of the landfill and blown out. And plastic bags in particular have a tendency to find their way into the ocean. Also balloons. But those aren't ingested as much. They're just, they get released, and I find them on the beach all the time.
Albatross would wind up eating plastic because they think it's fish.
Well, actually, I was just reading about this. What they're thinking now is, because they're trying to figure out, you know, why do the albatross eat these plastic bits that are out there? You know, they're brightly colored. They eat everything from bottle caps to toothbrushes to lighters, especially. And little organisms are, you know, will, like barnacles, will attach to the plastic pieces. The birds will eat the plastic to get to those things that are living on them. That used to work with driftwood, because they would eat little pieces of driftwood. They would be able to cough it up, but they're unable for some reason to get rid of this plastic that's in their gullet. But that's one of the theories for why they might be ingesting them, you know, as opposed to just simply mistaking it for a fish or some other piece of food.
Well, you brought some items with you today, and I want to talk a little bit about some of these items, because a lot of them are old school items, if you will. A lot of them are items that were around 100 years ago that work perfectly fine,
mm-hmm.
or they're used by other cultures and they work fine, mm-hmm. and there's no plastic necessary.
Right.
Now, obviously, if these materials were made out of plastic, they'd probably be used for longer periods of time than, say, a plastic bag or a water bottle. Like the one food container you brought in makes me think of that. As opposed to getting a piece of Tupperware,
mm-hmm.
you could instead get this one device, which I forget which country you said it was from.
Well, in India and Myanmar, and I believe in Thailand, they use these things called tiffins, and they've been around for a long time. They used to be made out of lacquer and bamboo, and they're made out of stainless steel now. And they've traditionally used these metal stacking containers, stainless steel. They're easy to clean, and they don't leach things into your food, which is another great effect. We haven't talked about the health effects on humans of using plastic. It's a kind of outside of my area of expertise, but there are a lot of studies out there that indicate plastics may be leaching toxic chemicals into our food, water. I mean, people are not using baby bottles made of plastic anymore. They're using glass, despite, you know, the potential dangers from it breaking, because they're realizing that the convenience of having, say, a plastic baby bottle is outweighed by the potential dangers of having things leach into the baby's milk.
What are some ways that we can reduce a lot of the disposable plastic we come in contact with? I guess shopping bags is probably the best place to start, right?
Every store now, every major retail, grocery store and every major pharmacy is required by law to sell reusable bags. And they do it at a very inexpensive cost. Basically, they're less than a dollar to get a reusable bag that you can then take back and reuse, instead of getting a plastic bag that you get home, you use it, you throw it away. And we've already talked about, well, what happens when you throw it away? I want to mention, because this is the mantra with plastics, and I think it's been a mantra for environmentalists for a long time, which is reduce, then reuse, then recycle. Recycle kind of being the least attractive alternative, because it takes a lot of resources. And you're already taking the resources to create the item, say a plastic water bottle, and then turning it into something else. So let's talk about reduction first. That's the primary thing. Taking a bag and putting your groceries in it, and then just throwing it back in your car when you're done. After I unload my groceries, I put my bags by the door, and the next time I walk out to my car, I put them in there. So I always have them with me.
So reducing the use of plastics is obviously the best idea. Recycling, that's an option as well.
Well, in San Diego, the amount of plastic that can be recycled curbside is very limited. Basically, narrow neck bottles, one or two, if you're looking at the number on the bottom, are recyclable. Pretty much any other kind of plastic, plastics from yogurt containers, tofu trays, plastic packaging, none of that can be recycled in your curbside recycling. I'm not saying it can't be recycled somewhere, but the city's not going to take it and recycle it. If you put it in a recycling bin, it just goes into the garbage. They sort it, and it just will end up in the landfill anyway. And I think that's something that people don't realize. The problem with plastic recycling is that, as I mentioned, it takes a tremendous amount of resources to convert, say, a plastic bottle into a fleece, which is one of the uses. I mean, it's great to divert it from a landfill. And I don't have the numbers on how much energy it takes, but not creating that in the first place, of course, would be better. It's estimated that only 1% to 3% of plastic bags that are used get recycled. Worldwide, over 1 trillion plastic bags are used every year. Most of them are ending up in the landfill and then in the environment, or just in the environment. One of the problems with recycling is that it costs about $4,000 to process or recycle a ton of plastic bags. The market price for that plastic is $32. So there is no incentive, there's no economic incentive to take that plastic and actually recycle it. A disturbing trend is that a lot of companies that are required to take the bags back for recycling, major grocery stores, send them on, in container loads to Asia where they're incinerated and the toxics end up going into the air. Not a good solution either.
And you burn all that fossil fuel just to get it across the ocean to go to Asia.
Yes, because they have to get rid of it somewhere. Again, you know, recycling is good if you have containers that can be recycled, but reducing or reusing, buying containers that can be used over and over again are the preferences. You know, once you turn it into in your recycling bin, you don't really know what happens to it.
You are going to be enjoying some rock and roll lifestyle here in a couple of weeks because you are going to be going on tour with a pretty well-known guy who's done a lot for the environment.
That's right. Jack Johnson has invited Surf Rider to go along on his worldwide tour for his new album. And we've already been...
What does Jack know about surfing, right?
Jack's been a longtime supporter of Surf Rider. And when he heard about our Rise Above Plastics program, he really wanted to highlight that. He's included us in his tour through Australia, New Zealand, and Japan. And we've had a booth at all of his concerts there, starting June 13th in Indianapolis. I'll be starting with his tour. And then we're going to Bonnaroo on the 14th.
Things are tough all over.
I know, and he's playing with Pearl Jam that night.
Oh, okay. All right, that should be
on
great.
On the 14th. What we're doing is we have a booth at each one of his concerts, and he's developed this program to encourage people to visit the booths, and we're included with several other nonprofits. He encourages people to go visit the nonprofits before the show starts, and the doors open a couple hours early, and people get these little passports, so they get stamped. You visit all the nonprofits, and you engage with them. You get a little stamp, and then you turn it in once you get all the stamps for a chance to win tickets to sit on the stage. So there's a real incentive for people to, you know, get all their stamps, visit all the nonprofits, and kind of force them into coming to our booth. I'm hoping to reach a lot of people who might not otherwise hear about the problem with plastics in the ocean, you know, especially in the Midwest. I'm going to Montreal and Ontario and Salt Lake City and lots of places where this is going, you know, I'm really going to be reaching people.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, and apparently I'm going on the tour bus.
Trouble. All right, Rise Above Plastics. How long has this been going on with the Surf Rider chapters?
They came up with the idea a couple of years ago. But the program is just getting rolled out at the national or international level this spring. We've been working on it in San Diego, and right now we are working on presenting a ban on plastic bags to the city of Encinitas. We're going to be doing it in a few weeks, and we're working on something for the city of San Diego as well to present something to them. But the idea is sometimes you need to legislate because people aren't taking action quickly enough voluntarily. And plastic bag bans have been sweeping the world. Entire countries have banned them.
And didn't Oakland, California recently do something involving plastic bags?
Yeah, Oakland has a ban. San Francisco was the first in, I think, the first in the country to completely ban plastic bags, although I do believe that they allow biodegradable plastics. And those are plastics that are made out of corn. There are problems with that. I'll touch on in a minute. The city of San Jose has just voted to look into the problem and look at implementing some kind of ordinance. The city of Malibu just voted to ban all plastic bags. The city of Santa Monica is working on an ordinance right now. So I do think that something that's coming, it's people are realizing that these are a menace to the environment and they shouldn't be allowed. Alternatively, there are some proposals to institute some taxes. There's some existing state laws and new bills that are going through that are aimed at potentially taxing plastic bags.
You mentioned that plastic bags and plastic in general is also being made out of corn.
Right. Corn-based plastic is biodegradable. So I want to differentiate it from petroleum-based plastic because it will actually break down. But it requires heat to break down. Like any kind of compost situation, you need heat. And once the plastic makes its way into the ocean, that heat isn't there to break it down. That plastic will still be out there. Now, it may eventually break down in the, you know, fish stomach. I don't know. They haven't been around long enough to study that. We don't necessarily see that as a great solution. And the other reason is, you know, corn and the manufacturing of corn plastic takes a lot of energy in its own right and a lot of petroleum-based fertilizers. It's not organic corn. And then you have to ship it and all of that stuff. So single-use plastics, even if they're made out of corn, because of the amount of energy that's required, it doesn't make sense. According to the Wall Street Journal, the U.S. goes through 100 billion plastic shopping bags annually. The estimated cost to retailers is $4 billion. We're trying to get people to reassess that. Californians throw away 294 million pounds of plastic bags every year. That's 147,000 tons, enough waste to circle the planet over 250 times. In the state of California, 600 plastic bags are thrown away every second. If Californians cut their plastic bag waste in half, it would save over 2,000 barrels of oil a day, over 800,000 barrels a year, and keep 73,000 tons of rubbish out of our landfills. In the 1980s, it was estimated that plastic rubbish caused the deaths of over 100,000 marine mammals and sea turtles in a year in the North Pacific alone. And right now, less than 5% of U.S. shoppers use canvas, cotton, or mesh reusable bags. What we're asking is for people to change that number by choosing reusable when they shop. We have a blog that is updated very frequently with all kinds of information about plastics, both health effects and effects in the environment, studies, news, plastic bag bans. It's just a clearinghouse of information, and we have a lot of links on there. And the blog is riseaboveplastics.blogspot.com. You can also access it by clicking the link on the Surfrider San Diego homepage, which is surfridersd.org. And there are a lot of links there. Algalita.org is algalita.org. They have a lot of the research information there, and you can get kind of more scientific statistics there. But yeah, look for the links on our blog, as we've put a whole variety from where you can shop to what people are doing to reduce their plastic footprint to research.
Riseaboveplastics.blogspot.com. Surfridersd.org, Algalita.org, Algalita.org.
Yes.
Elizabeth, it's been wonderful having you in on the program today. I hope we got a chance to cover everything, because it's like every time you start talking about this, it's like peeling off an onion, and you start getting all these different layers and all these different approaches you can take. But basically, it sounds like the most sensible, sane thing to do is just start reusing and reducing the volume of plastics that you do every day.
Think twice about single-use plastics. That's, you know, a little catchphrase, because, you know, you should just think about your waste stream and what's going out there.
All we got to do now is get rid of all these water bottles and we'll be in good shape.
Right. Well, I think that people who buy plastic water bottles in this day and age are just, they should realize that they're just wasting their money. One thing that I've started doing is for the reusable bottles, and we have links to where you can buy reusable bottles. You can also buy them at Whole Foods. They're manufactured by SIG. There's also Clean Canteen. These reusable bottles, you can take a lot of places and get refilled. You don't even realize. Like, most coffee shops have, I won't mention any particular names, but even in the airport, I take an empty reusable water bottle through security. It's got no liquid in it. And then I refill it at the coffee shop for free. So I'm not forced to spend $3 on a tiny bottle of water to take on the plane. It makes good sense. You're not creating waste, and you know, you're not getting fleeced you know, for $3 for a tiny bottle of water.
And again, that's riseaboveplastics.blogspot.com, surfridersd.org, and algalita.org, A-L-G-A-L-I-T-A.org. Elizabeth, very, very nice seeing you. Thanks for coming by. We appreciate you stopping by today and talking about plastics and plastic reduction, and good luck on tour.
Thanks, Tommy.
We want a full report when you get back.
All right.
Tell Jack we said hey.
Okay, we'll do.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT, FM 94.9. Many thanks again to Elizabeth Willis from the Executive Committee of the San Diego branch of the Surfrider Foundation and Surfrider's Rise Above Plastics campaign for coming by and talking about plastics and the tragic overabundance of plastic waste in our seas and oceans, especially in the North Central Pacific Gyre, as well as sharing some thoughts, ideas, and even product suggestions about reducing your use of plastic. For more information, go to the San Diego Surfrider homepage. Again, that's www.surfridersd.org. And scroll down to the Rise Above Plastics portion of the homepage, or go to riseaboveplastics.blogspot.com. That's riseaboveplastics.blogspot.com. The Algalita Marine Research Foundation is that other organization Elizabeth was talking about. They've got a great website at algalita.org, A-L-G-A-L-I-T-A, www.algalita.org. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media. And as producer, I am solely responsible for the content of this program. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, I would love to hear from you. You let me know. Email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. And for more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous shows, you can go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM949 website. Now that's at www.fm949sd.com/treehuggers. Or just go to the FM949 homepage and click on the Tree Huggers International logo. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM949. We will be back next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation. It is next on FM 94.9. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.